No, I don't think I regret any of it. I just wish I had more.
Straight out the left. Straight out of the lead, joined today by two of my friends, Ron Patlow and Dusty Hanshaw, podcast horse superstars in their own minds.
Mom's mind.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, guys.
Ah, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
Been in the back room a couple times, which puts me in an elite club. And now I'm in the back room with the microphones, which is an even more elite club. Very happy about this, Flex.
No, it's great to have you both here. And am I wrong by saying that you both came to Vegas, and I know you got the show, but you both didn't know that you were being here on the same day, same weekend, same time?
Yeah, coincidence. It's just funny. My partner and I, Emily, we were like, hey, we need to get away for just a weekend that isn't work-related.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, January's got a couple open weekends. We just booked a trip. And then talking to Dusty, and he's like, yeah, I got to go to... Oh, no, I was talking to Nikki.
Yeah, because she was checking in.
Yeah, and I said, hey, you're 10 weeks out this weekend. Why don't you take a free meal? Have a little break. You've been dieting really hard. Your giving's going great. Let's have a meal this weekend. Just chill. Yeah. She goes, oh, I'll be in Vegas. That'll be awesome.
Oh my God.
And I go, what? I wonder if we're going to be there too. So the next thing you know, Dusty texts me, okay, I got you tickets to the Magic Show with us on Saturday. We're going for dinner.
When's the last time you've seen each other physically? I know we speak every week.
The Olympia.
Yeah, the O.
Must be a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
So Orlando, Olympia.
How often do you guys get to see each other?
After it gets rolling in the year, it's every trip. So
okay. It's
2 weeks, it's the Arnold, then 2 weeks later again, then 3 weeks later again.
Okay.
FIBO, you know, Body Powder.
Yeah, so it's pretty regular.
UK Arnold.
You remember. Yeah.
We went to Dubai a couple times together. Yeah. So
it's great to have this relationship, this friendship. I know your significant others are friends as well, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And traveling and experiencing life. Yeah. And now experiencing Vegas. Again, it's so crazy. Let's think of that, right? Of all the dates in the year, you both book the same freaking weekend.
We're also busy the same weekend.
Yeah, that's so far so too, right?
We have the same holes in our schedule.
It's great to have you. Yeah, I know this is a improv podcast. We put it together because you guys were in town. I didn't even know you were in town until I got... You did, in fairness, you both texted me randomly and said you'd be... But I didn't connect the dots. I didn't at all. I just thought you were together.
No.
And then yesterday, as you knew, I was at SHOT Show running around. I didn't get to see you. I wasn't dodging you, by the way. I know it looked really suspicious.
He was in his car waiting till I left.
I was looking at the cameras.
And he goes, there he goes. There he goes.
I know he parks in the back and comes in the back door, right? Yeah. So we just missed him. Yeah.
You were saying something about my sex life?
Right? Yeah. It's all metaphor.
Yeah. No, but I seen Ron coming in. Literally, I was running to the restroom and he's taking a selfie in the front.
I was trying to get the Uber to connect.
Who puts a fucking phone up here? Let's be honest.
I came back in. I was like, I couldn't get the lighting right.
Yeah, one of them like fucking fingers in the air to get signal. This is Vegas, bro. There's nothing wrong with signal anywhere you go, okay? He was selfieing in my lobby. And I was like, what the hell are you doing here? He's like, Dusty just left. So I run outside looking for you, of course.
You were gone.
My Uber was fast. He was in a Nissan Rogue, so he was out of there. Four cylinders.
So what are you guys going to be doing in town? I know you got your own things going on. Is there anything fun?
Just chilling out. There's apparently the SHOT Show, like you said.
Yeah.
We didn't go, but that's funny. There's apparently a good concrete to go in town.
There's always something.
Yeah. We're going to go to the Magic Show tomorrow night. Limitless.
We're seeing that Shin Lim. I sent you one of the clips yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm like, we're doing this. Every time we come to Vegas, I got to do the shows. You know
got
this. Got to see something different. So that's the stretch. And then, as luck would have it, dinner. So I'm like,
beautiful.
Whatever after that. And Nikki's simple. And I don't know if Ron's eating style, but it's as basic as it comes.
Yeah, I'm easy.
Yeah, you are. You would still eat on prep, right?
Plus road food.
Okay.
So at home, I eat.
Yeah.
And then when I'm on the road, I have my burgers if I want. I eat whatever I want. I was talking to your wife. She said it's how you are. You can eat whatever you want, but you just tend to eat really clean.
I just love eating good food, man.
And I don't like being bloated anymore. No. I hate feeling full.
No.
I don't want to, like, those days of, you'd be so proud of how much you ate at a meal. You'd be like, oh, I destroyed that place.
Yeah, no, thank you.
And I just have no interest in feeling like that anymore.
Because we're, again, with three friends, three friends getting together and just chatting it up. This could go in any different direction. So for my viewers who are watching on YouTube and listening on Spotify, my apologies in advance because we're gonna go in any which way. And I thought you were in town for AVN, which is the biggest porn convention in town, which I was hoping to get some juicy shit on episode.
I was going to say that the third expo that is happening is there's the AVN. So we might
left that off the table, Dustin.
You changed the subject. But we might head down there. You never know when you need to buy another.
Coincidentally, is in that hotel.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Whoops. And he's been before a few times too.
Hey, coincidentally, Shin Lim is also in my hotel too. So it's our Limitless show is also there. So it was just hilarious.
I know he's not going to like this, but Tyus used to be a magician on the strip.
Oh.
Get that fucking mic in your
tongue. Yeah, they don't know right. who I am, and there's no mic on me, so they can't see. When you go and see Shin Lim,
yes.
there's another guy in the show. His name is Colin Cloud.
Right.
He is the best part of the show.
No okay. okay.
No knock, Shin Lim, if you're listening.
Looking forward to it. And I have to say, too, I told Dusty I was going to make sure I mentioned this early. We want to make sure that the people listening know that we see you as one of the guys. You're one of the Dynasty champions was probably the most accessible to the D-list pros like us.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you like that we bumped ourselves to D, though? I thought that was...
Oh, my
He started
God.
At E, and I was
I
like...
I started at E, like, at and least Dusty's like, that's D. extreme. Yeah. Don't be so hard on yourself. Oh and gosh. I said, how's D? And he went, that's good.
It's fair.
Oh yeah.
It's like a slight reach.
But yeah, you were like one of the most accessible. Like, you know, you're winning the 212s. You're winning these over, and you just still remained exactly the same level of accessibility to all of the other guys in the industry that just saw you as the initial young kid that came into the IFBB. Like, so the guy that you were when you first arrived in the IFBB, you stayed that guy with us the whole time.
Try to be.
Which not everyone was able to do. And it's not even a personality thing, but life gets too hectic and there's so much going on. You don't see them anymore. They vanish as soon as the event's over and they're not really around. But you were always like the guy that would just saw every time, and you always had time to stop and chat and, hey, boys, and take pictures at the booth and all that shit. And it never ended.
Do you know why?
Because he needed my videos. That's why.
Well, I do want to dive into that later on, to be honest. That is true. But coming from a rugby culture, you guys remind me so much of my rugby friends. In the sense where, take the bodybuilding element, the stage,
right.
that's the end cap, right? And we can all judge people based on winning performance. I like to have relationships with people. So I knew that you guys were going to be at various different shows. And for me, I always would remember two shows that we'd always bump into each other, Body Power or FIBO.
Yep.
And
yep.
FIBO normally was the one, right?
Your booth seemed always
normally
close.
Right across. Yeah, yeah. And your booth was always vibing. There was always so much antics going on there. You always had like good energy and whatever else. And whatever it was around the world, we'd bump into each other and just have a good fucking laugh, right?
Yeah.
And I never, because I brought a lot of that rugby mindset into bodybuilding, the Jack the Lad, the kind of the shit talk stuff.
Yeah.
And you both love to give it as much as you get, right?
Absolutely.
Right. And if you can't take it, which a lot of people can't, unfortunately, when you know somebody loves vibing, there's always going to be a laugh. Before you see somebody, his mouth is just, okay, what's going to come out of his mouth next, you know?
One of my favorite photos that I have from my whole bodybuilding life is a photo from FIBO in like, it'd be like 2013 or 14 or something. And you're at another booth.
Okay.
One of your original
it's
sponsors.
Okay, you can say it.
Oh, you're at the BSN booth.
Okay.
And Guy was there with you.
Yeah.
And I came over and we're starting chatted, and then everyone's, let's get a photo. So we get in a group, and every time they go to take the photo, Guy puts his hand up on your arm to hide your arm.
Fucking asshole.
And you look at the photo, and you're like, you hid my fucking arm. And Guy's like, oh, sorry about that. So we get back in there, and you go take the photo again. Guy puts his hand up to block your arm again. And you're like, fucking fuck. And you're slapping his arm. And he's just blocking your arm, and his timing was impeccable. Bang. He got every photo. There's no photos in my camera where your arm is visible.
Can you just even see a little bit of it?
The tricep roundness gone. It's perfect placement. Your arm looks like it's 14
inches. You look like
inches.
One of us.
Yeah, and then his arm looks bigger than you.
Of course.
Yeah, well, because he was coming up and getting a flex.
Yeah, it was so funny. I had 8 pictures in a row. I was like, flex, his arm is gone at every photo.
Fucking
oh, man.
He was great to work with.
Yeah.
Oh, that was my damn era. That era was so much fun. He used to play these games in the booth just because it was... I shouldn't really say too much, but okay, fuck it, here we go. You know, you're on there and the lines are just the ass in FIBO. But then English, a lot of people couldn't speak.
Right.
So then we'd have like a word we'd throw into the sentence and then we'd...
yes.
The old thanks slot?
Just throw it in. And the bar from Thursday went higher and higher. We won't say what was said, but you'd had to throw it in the middle of the sentence. And it's, you know that, what's it called? Fight Club. And they throw that scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Where people are in the cinema and they're like.
Jordan slam dunking, this one frame.
No, it's where they're in the cinema and he cuts the porn in.
Yes.
Yes.
And people are like, Did I just
did I just see
that?
You did.
Yeah, I won't say the words, but we slipped a few in, and it was a tally. Number one every year.
Still the champion.
That's
still
funny, man.
Brush the shoulder off of him.
That's his greatest achievement in his entire career. Let me tell you what I did.
That thing's a cup you're somewhere.
Yeah, meanwhile, all these wonderful fans are thinking, wow, it was great to talk to Flex. I really got to work on my English. His accent was really interesting. There were these other words he was using.
I just lost so many fans doing that, didn't I?
Jose had that one year at FIBO. When people would come up, he had two pictures that he had, 8x10s. And one of them, he had his hand like this. And he was just chill.
Yeah.
And then another one, he was hitting the most muscular. I mean, his hands are real down low. And he goes, do you want the look at my dick? Or the look at my dick? And they're like... and they would look at him and they're like... What? And he goes, this one or this one? And then they would just answer. And then you'd see him walking away like...
Because he'd only say it once.
Yeah.
But real quick. Yeah.
Jose's fun to work with.
I was losing my mind the whole weekend.
Jose's so another fun. Another level.
We battled hard on that stage, him and I. He was like my fierce competition.
He was one of the guys that legitimately pushed you. Like, you were, like, untouchable for the most part the whole time, dude. I know you had a couple battles where you got pushed, but he was one of the only guys that ever, like, really showed up against you to be, like, a threat. Because I just didn't think there was really much... Many times when there was.
That was my goal, to try to separate myself from the pack fucking 6 weeks out, suffering to make that weight. But, yeah.
Also, too, one thing that I find really interesting, I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, but looking at all, I've looked at all your years before, like I've studied, like I put them all, like I've, it's interesting to me.
On his fucking ceiling.
Yeah.
Right next to the mirror.
your second last win.
Yeah.
I thought... was not your best.
There's no question.
Yeah. I thought that was one of the ones that was like, oh, that wasn't easy.
Do you know why?
No, why?
Dallas passed away.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah. It was in like a bubble wrap.
It's funny what
you're not
your
to change
does.
The tone but that's a very interesting thing because we talk about the mindset of people going into the show and controlling the environment.
Yeah.
And I've spoken about it on stages, in seminars, and but that truly was that year for me.
Yeah.
And controlling the environment.
And what I liked the most was that the next year was your best ever.
Yeah.
And that was how you finished.
I wanted to go out that way.
And you know who else did that? Lee Haney.
Oh.
Lee Haney, he was not his best the second last win. And then his last win, he was on the best he'd ever been. And I love that for guys when you don't want to see the guy get knocked out 3, 4, 5 times in a row and the Dana has to step in and tell you it's over.
Him in the back room.
Let's preserve this legacy, that sort of thing. And I don't know. It was just really well done and really well handled in the end looking back on it. I just thought it was an awesome run that you had, man.
I'm glad... As that was my last show, obviously my intentions were to go up, and we all know the rest of that, but I said to myself, this is going to be my last show, and I told everybody, I put it out there, and I made sure that every Olympia has its why, but that year was, this is my last, and I also have said this many times in the podcast, I wanted to consciously be conscious about everything. Like, I could tell you how hot the stairs were before I walked up, and just from body heat. And then when you put your first foot on that stage, what we're talking about. As soon as you get on that stage, them unforgiving lights, it's hot as hell.
Yep.
I just remember that too. I remember the crowd reaction. I remember looking around the crowd to see certain faces that I knew and smiling and winking or whatever else. Somebody's like cheering. You look into the abyss of people because you can only really see the first couple of rows.
Yeah.
And it was a show when I said to myself, you've been so robotic for 6 of them. Truly.
Right.
I couldn't even define backstage from one show to the next.
Yeah.
But that last show really stands out from the pack for me because mentally, physically, I knew it was my best.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't wait to display it. I was excited and nervous because I knew it was my last. And I just tried to live the moment as much as I could. And that's what I try to tell a lot of first-time competitors. Yes, you're going to be nervous, but try to remember as much as you can from the show, regardless of where you place. Whether it's placing that you didn't like, let it piss you off. But at least be in the moment. your fans, your family, whatever you want to call them, are going to be out in the audience cheering your name. They've all made the effort, bought plane tickets, whatever, to be there and cheer you on. Just be present and enjoy the moment because you've worked your ass off to be there. So I had to take my own information in and be present. And obviously that was my last show. So at least I can say I was present, I enjoyed it, suffered for it, and I went out the way I wanted to.
I think it's weird that you, in hindsight, you look back at careers, and I do the same thing. I talk to young guys because the beginning of my career, I didn't even get pictures. My whole thought was, I'll do that when I'm good. And now you look back, and I'm like, what I would do for those early pictures to see where you came from.
I know.
So that's something I hammer on the young guys because I remember when I turned pro, which took 4 years, I knew after prejudging I was winning. And Dante texts me and he goes, how you feel? And I was like, I think if we get the RDLs a little higher, I can get, and he's like, what? And I'm like, the hams, I mean, before we do this, I got to come up. And he's like, you're on stage tonight.
it never ends, man.
And you just click over and it was like, okay, this goal was accomplished. I'm just waiting for time to catch up. But we know, I mean, I walked out and it was one of those ones, I was the last guy called up and I just walked to the edge. And before I got there, Steve goes in the middle and I'm like, okay, this is done. You know,
like that feeling, right?
But then at that point, my brain just clicked over. Mm-hmm. That goal's handled. Let's move to the next. So now it's like when I'm working with guys before the show, same thing. It's soak this up. Mm-hmm. This is your Olympia.
Yeah.
It's the South Carolina, it's tiny show. It's the biggest show you've ever done.
Yeah.
If you get third place, soak it up. Mm-hmm. Your mom will want that trophy. My mom has all of mine. Blows my mind. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with them now. Still in the house. I'm like, what do I do with these things? But
one is a doorstop in my grand's house.
Yeah.
And it's the universe trophy.
That's amazing.
It's just the universe.
Jim would be happy.
Play with it.
Jim would be happy. Yeah. Everybody else, yeah. But somehow it found itself over there. Before anybody who's won the universe gets in the comment section, I don't want to say anything.
Oh, no,
it's
no,
my
no,
grand they took the trophy. It ended up being on the mantelpiece and slowly moving lower and lower. Now it's the fucking doorstop. It's heavy as hell, so it serves its purpose.
The door's not moving.
It's right by the door, so it does.
It's perfect.
When the postman comes over, it's like, oh, it's an interesting trophy for somebody who's up there.
That's
but do you know you mentioned something too, and about early photos. Mm-hmm. I took a few before I got into the competing, but then I covered up so much. I know you guys are big on covering up.
Oh, yeah.
So as you guys can remember, I'd always be in a hoodie in Florida weather. Mm-hmm. And he's like, flex, because Jay used to bust my balls about all the time. Put a tank top on. I was like, eh, it's not me. I still am so glad I lived that process of the, because I came from Dorian Yates era. Same, as did you guys.
Yeah.
Baggies.
Plus I'm a Canadian.
Rag tops. So yeah, it's cold. Yeah, I know. Well, I was in fucking Florida.
We didn't have that excuse, but yeah.
But then that mentality of covering up until show day. I didn't really want to show anybody what I look like. Even my training partners would have to bring it out of me. It's take some progress photos for coaching. Mm-hmm. Like, next week.
Right.
I don't know why I fucking put it off the next, like, as if something magical would happen. So it kicks in system wise.
You won't eat cookies on the weekend and you'll somehow look better on Monday. Yeah.
But do you regret them times of wearing the baggies and covering up?
No, I don't think I regret any of it. I just wish I had more. What I wish I had more of is back in the click, click, snap, you know, those old days.
Yeah, I lived there too.
Yeah, back in those days. We could have taken so many more pictures in the gym and just all those memories. And I've got a handful of photos of some of the guys I trained with back in the 90s and that sort of stuff. But photos of us in the squat rack and photos of us killing it on the dumbbell presses and stuff. I know there's a handful of them. I know my friends have a picture here and there, but man, I wish I had the people now with this alphabetized library of their entire training history. They have every set of deadlifts they've ever done.
That's
something Dusty does. And I just think, man, I wish I had that old shit with the purple Gators gym baggies on and the boat neck shirts with the tank tops. And I got photos of me and my friends with fanny packs on and all that shit.
It's coming back to fashion. It's all when it's come full circle.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen bell bottoms twice. I've seen fanny packs twice. It's getting out of hand.
Just means we're getting old.
Yeah, those high-waisted jeans came back. There's nothing I could do about it. It was terrible.
I think when you look at the old days, though, I started working with JJ Marsh when I first got into bodybuilding. And it was funny because I went to the gym and I feel like the hardcore mentality of coaches was different then. I was referred to him by somebody. I call him to get his address, drive him to his place. And he's like, all right, here's where I live. And he goes, yeah, if I don't think you can win, I'm not going to work with you. I've never met him.
Wow.
I was like, okay. So I roll in, go through my shots, looking at him. He goes, all right, see you tomorrow at 4 a.m.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay. So I get to the gym at 3:50 because I'm going to be ready. And I'm waiting inside. Got my tank top on, got my shorts on. He comes in. He goes, what the hell are you wearing? I'm like, gym clothes. He goes, cover up. You can't hide huge. When you're so big I can see it in a hoodie, you can wear a tank top. Until then, wear a hoodie.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. And then by the time I got there, I wasn't comfortable in a tank top anymore. I just wore hoodies for the rest of my career.
Yeah.
Unless somebody was, that's the only thing iForce used to say. If we're going to pay a guy to come film you, you got to wear a tank top. And I'm like, fine. So those are the only workouts. So if anybody ever saw me in a tank, that just meant that Todd was there filming. And I would still start with a baggy 4XL t-shirt. And at the very end, I'd give him the 5 minutes.
That's exactly where I was. Get a little pump on first. You look in the mirror, I was like, okay, that's not that bad.
Yeah, we're good.
Got a pump on. Thank God I didn't start off like that. But these guys come in here right now. No knock on the new gen. Some of these guys would come in as if they've already finished the workout. I like the element, and I used to say this, because me and Rafa used to train together, and John De La Rosa, they'd come in with a tank top or something like that. Bro, we're not filming you in a tank top. So I installed a couple of things into Hafa where I was like, put a t-shirt on or something, or put a hoodie on. And as the workout's going off, peel off one layer and peel off another layer, especially when we were filming. You don't want everybody to see, you go to a movie, you're going to see the fucking ending. You want to stay until the very end. Watch the YouTube to see what he looks like at the end. You want a little bit of a cock teasing. From layer at a time, you know.
Think AVNs. AVNs.
If you give me what I want right off the bat, I'm out the door in 5 minutes. I don't finish it.
You see the views just going down after.
Yeah, sharp decline.
View time is terrible.
Yeah. But I think there's something to that era. I do love that era. And also we come from the era where there's no social media too, right? So that there was no pressure for us to live this. Unfortunately, we've all now adapted and adopted the new era. Mm-hmm. But I'm so blessed to have 1 foot in the era of magazines and 1 foot in the era now of social media. Because I lived that. I know what it was like. The VHS stuff and waiting 4 weeks for America to get Lee Priest's new VHS to come in. And I loved that. And then when I joined my first hardcore gym, all the guys there were all in rag tops and clown pants.
Right.
And so I was, oh shit, okay, I guess you have to get a rag top. How are you hell going to find a rag top for somebody who's a medium, right? I found one. And then you had to have the little, the thin stringer poking out.
Underneath,
That never got seen.
And it has to sit on the traps, right?
So yes.
Not every tank top's the same.
Yeah.
You want,
Before we lose our fucking new viewers here that have no clue what we're talking about.
What? Your mainstreamers?
Yeah, no. We've got a vast viewership of people who business to bodybuilding, so we tie everything around. But talking of which, how hard was it for you to transition from the world of bodybuilding into the world of entrepreneurship?
I remember very young. I remember when I was 19, and I got to give credit to the same two guys. I give them so much credit for so many things, but I had these two friends in Australia, John Davey and Nick Jones. Great guys. Still friends with them. Still like, they're still my brothers. And I remember them telling me, like, they were hardcore bodybuilders trying to turn pro as well. We were all training together, but they were older than me and they had the wisdom. And they said, all of this, they used to say it all the time, the skills you learn with this, when you're done, when we're all done, we just take those exact same skills and we just blueprint them onto whatever we want to do and we'll kick everybody's ass. I remember that was like the general lesson. And they were already starting to do that. They were conniving and scheming businesses, like coming in, and now they've both gone on to do just that.
It's
right,
very successful.
And so I always just had a confidence. I look back on some of the years where I was like a broke bodybuilder. We all go through that phase where you're like a broke bodybuilder, and I'm like, how was I not more worried and stressed about my money? Like now I'm like so concerned about finances all the time. I'm checking my investments and I'm like, oh, 1%, it's up 1%. Oh, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, and I think back to when I had no money and I wasn't even thinking about money. I was just thinking about bodybuilding. And I think, how in the hell was I doing that? But I think I always just had a confidence. Like, I have these skills of just like relentlessly doing miserable shit for long periods of time. And I don't even enjoy for a result that I want. So I can just do that if I ever have to. I just felt that way. And
so
and then like it just happens to be true. You have the skills.
Yeah. I've said this many times. The life's lessons that I learned from competing in bodybuilding truly transcended into my business.
Yeah.
Because you have this mentality that you adapt. Being around people, there's just this relentless mindset to get to that show. That show did be in July. Come hell, high water, rain or shine, you are making that show. Injuries,
yeah.
And
yeah.
then when you finish, you're tired, that mentality then transitions into whatever you can do.
Yeah. There's so many, I give people the and all the time. They're like, oh, my knee hurts. And? Like,
not both of them.
Yeah. You learn so much about working around adversity, like to get through it. Like, your knee hurts, but it doesn't hurt on this one exercise. So you're going to do 10 hard sets of that exercise, and then you're going to still win the day. You know what I mean? That attitude. And people that have, oh, I don't feel well today, or I think I'm run down. Like, that stuff just doesn't exist when there's like these crazy, ridiculous goals that your friends don't understand and your family doesn't get. And
it's
I'm just really grateful that I did something that taught me those lessons.
Also the relentlessness for yourself. I remember when I first heard about you always being the bridesmaid.
Yeah, it sucked.
I think every year, because again, you only had the chance to turn pro once. Same as the UK. So everybody was like, oh man, this guy, I think it was, what, me, six bridesmaids?
I wound up being 8-time runner-up at the Canadian Nationals.
Eight?
And twice at North Americans.
Oh, yeah. My apologies, I left two out.
Yeah. I wound up getting two wins and eventually a pro card. But yeah, it was just, I just look at it as people say, how do you feel about that? And I just think that I happened to fit into a category of guy who his genetics were barely good enough to maybe turn pro, and I just didn't give up, so I made it happen. But I could have easily quit. Like, I was running out of steam for sure.
So why didn't you?
I kept getting pretty good place. If I would have gone and got like a 12th or something, it might have been I did have one bad year where I didn't get good placing. I pretty much was always in the top group, and always, I quite often had some first place votes. So it just fueled it. It was almost like a bad thing in a way. Like, I would have done it forever. It would have kept happening.
Enough. He was trying to quit.
Yeah. No, the last year I competed, I remember I text Chris Aceto 20 weeks out, and I was like, okay, I've talked with Emily, and I'm going to let you know this is my last go. If it doesn't happen this time, that's it.
Done.
And Chris said, okay, I gotcha. And then I sent him my photos, and he said, these are the third worst photos I've ever seen.
So this is it, huh?
He said, he said, because I had been really injured, and I hadn't trained arms or legs for a while, and I had all this PRP done, and it was a mess. And he said, yeah, only Dusty and Jose have ever sent me worse photos than this. And
we
then
did
he,
it regularly, though.
And then
I love how the connected.
Yeah. And then the next text was, you've got 20 weeks and you need every single one of them.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, shit, okay, it's on. And that was it.
So what was different about that prep that drove you to the first place compared to any other?
I knew that I wasn't going to be as big as I should be because my body was wearing out. I couldn't train the way I wanted to. And I knew I had to just purely make sure I was conditioned and all the stuff you can do to create illusion. Make sure my waist is tiny. Make sure I'm just peeled to the bone. Make sure my face is caved in so it looks like I've got some sort of disease. I literally would just look at my face. That was my progress. I was like, okay, it's coming. It's coming. It was one of those weird years, kind of Hail Mary-ish in a way. And then just went like this a lot. Yeah, it was just one of those things.
I was hoping for something else. This happened. Yeah. No, Hail Mary.
Just
I was fingers crossed.
Throw yourself in the blender one more time.
Oh, my gosh. When your face is so peeled in, when you're chewing gum and you eat the side of your cheeks.
Yeah.
When your face is that sunken.
Scar tissue up down the sides.
I still got some loose skin in there.
Yeah.
Dusty, you have a very similar story of relentlessness and never giving up on your side, too. Tell us about your pursuit to pro card.
Mine was different because I actually had the business side first. So I owned retail stores and was doing bodybuilding at the same time.
I did not know this.
Yeah. So bodybuilding was a passion. And what ended up happening was it was actually FIBO 1 year. We get done with FIBO. You know how it works. You get done. You go back to the room, clean up. You go eat. You go to the gym. You train. You come back. You eat. You go to your room. Everyone goes to bed. If you own 5 retail stores, you get on the computer and you work. And I worked for 4 hours, 5 hours, do all my stuff, go to bed, wake up 2 hours later, go to the lobby, start the day. FIBOs were long days back then. And third night, I was like, wait a minute. My competition in business isn't wasting this much time overseas, tinkering around year-round with a hobby. So I'm coming in at like 70% against their 100. And then I'm like, bodybuilding, I'm genetically already down from the guys I'm chasing, and I'm giving up 5 hours of sleep on these nights and running businesses. And I just thought to myself, I can do business whenever I want. I know how to do it. I mean, you guys know this now that you do business. I joke with people. I'm like, I'll buy any business. I'll make it work. It's fine. And so I said, I got to sell this business because I want to do this and I can't do it forever. And it's a passion and I'm young enough. Let's just wing it. And so I told my wife at the time, I said, hey, I'm going to sell the stores. She was like, okay. And I didn't tell anybody. And literally about a week and a half later, a guy called me. And he's like, hey, do you remember me? I used to sell you drinks. And I was like, yeah. He goes, I'm moving back from Alaska. I want to buy your stores. I didn't advertise.
She wasn't out there putting it on Craigslist or anything like that, right?
If she does, thank you. So he ended up buying my stores about 6 weeks later.
Dang.
We were one and done. And now he actually owns Muscle Factory Gym that you went to the other day.
Come on.
Yeah. So he's a good friend of mine. And
Lance.
Yeah, he owns those. Yeah. And that gave me the time to enjoy bodybuilding. It also gave me time to make some mistakes because I was making good money as an amateur and I didn't need to do anything else and I got lazy and I didn't do anything else. So you're making good money until your sponsor calls you and goes, hey, we're selling the business. So your contract's gone. And it was funny because I remember I read the email and I was like, never been broke. Not in a long time, at least. And all I have is what I see in this bank account right here. This is not good. But that was another learning lesson because I just like bodybuilding, you're bad showing, whatever. I was like, all right, how much money was I making? And I said to myself, I think I can get that back in 3 months. And I got it back in 6 weeks.
Wow.
I was like, oh, there it is. I turned on all the hustle in the business side and that cranked. But I think that's what allowed my bodybuilding to be what it was. Being at the level I was at, I was never confused. A lot of guys, young guys, I feel bad. They come up and they can't be honest with what they have. Or I'll say something. I always say it like joking, but they're like, oh, you're too humble. I'm like, I'm not humble. I'm real. I'm not blind. I know what competition is. I know what my talents are. I know how I can make a living from this industry. And it's not on that stage. It's doing other things. I was able to approach it as a pure passion and just loving to do it. And that was the part that was easy for me because when I would do a show, it was literally like an addiction to the work. My favorite of my entire career show was 2011. I reached out to Chris and I said, hey, I want to be peeled out of my mind. And he was like, all right, we can do that. So that was our focus. Did the show. I took 10th, worst placing of my career as an amateur. And I was so fired up.
Really?
Because I was sliced out of my head. We had lost muscle. Like, both of us just zeroed in on the topic of peeled. Mm-hmm. Then you go back in hindsight and you look at pictures side by side. And I've told Ron this before. About five or six weeks out, I remember the rest of the lat pull down. I had to click it down one more. And it didn't ever enter my head that I didn't get shorter. So the only thing that could mean is your legs are smaller.
Oh, shit. You got small legs anyway.
Yeah, they were way down. I was like, we're on the junior level over here.
Holy shit.
But we did the show, and I remember the greatest part of it was I get done with prejudging, and I hear this thick Boston accent.
Of course.
And I didn't know Jose yet. And I hear him go, Dusty fucking Angel, you were shredded. And I look over, and I'm like, that's Jose Raymond. Why does he have any idea who I am? I don't give a shit what you placed. That was disgusting.
You shouting that while you were on stage?
Dude. No, this is, I'd walk it out.
Oh, right.
And I mean, everybody's out there. I see Steve looking over. Like,
and he's got that accent to it.
Oh, and you don't have to turn your head.
No, they all know it's Jose.
You know it's him. Plus, it's loud, so it's got to be him. And I remember thinking, like, this is awesome. Because, again, and I think we all know this, when you see somebody that'll go through whatever it takes to get peeled, I don't care how good you are. He's a Hall of Fame bodybuilder. I just took 10th at Nationals, and he's coming to tell me how nuts I looked. I just remember going, that's the kind of respect you can earn through grind, hustle.
Absolutely.
And again, that is what dips into business. And that's why when things go wrong with business, I like, Ron knows this, I love to share stories of things that went wrong, because people, they never hear that. And I'm always like, oh, let me tell you about the time I lost 200 grand in a year. That was fun.
Talk about it.
But the funny thing is when those big mistakes happen, it's just like bodybuilding. It's just like those things. You go, what did I do? Okay, I was too zeroed in on one thing, which is a very common mistake. I couldn't see the forest through the trees. Oh, and by the way, I can fix it. It's fine. You can make more money. You can do more things. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it, like you guys said, it all just runs together. And I think for me, business top bodybuilding and bodybuilding top business. So it went back and forth. And that's why my newest thing as a retired bodybuilder and just starting to train and have fun again is I look and I go, I'm starting to understand why people who have that don't have a stage to run to have a little harder time clicking in. Because it's like, for me, when I'm like, I need to eat, I'm like, I really just need to go make some more money. And I just slide the meal over, and then, you know, a few months goes by, and you happen to see yourself on a beach, you're like, I should probably start eating those meals again. That ain't good.
So what are you into right now? What are you working on endeavor-wise?
Right now, the main stuff is we're got housing stuff, which is small, just my own stuff, and then I want to get a gym open where we're at.
Okay.
But what I'm running into is waiting for the right space. It's very tricky there.
But you've moved, too.
Yeah, I'm in South Carolina.
Which, by the way, that's me texting you, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
You didn't tell him you moved, by the way.
Hey, you said you were in Scottsdale. I know people. It didn't matter that I was there.
I was like, yo, I'm in your stomping grounds. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'm not here, but...
Go see this guy.
Go see that guy. And this guy. If you want to train in another gym, he gave me, like, a list of gyms with all atmospheres. But then he hooked me up with Lance. But yeah, you didn't tell me you moved to North Carolina, right?
South Carolina,
I'm sorry. Yep. My wife just told me before we went on air.
Yeah.
So that move, when did that happen?
That was almost 3 years ago.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm a little bit behind the curve.
That was year zero.
That was at birth again. That was right after the coma.
Yeah.
I'd been out for about 6-8 weeks. And I went over there, actually. What was funny was I came out of the coma.
But
I can't just skip the coma. Yeah.
We all know that, so, that was a story.
You know,
in
when
the
you
room.
Come out of a coma.
Yeah, I came out of a coma and I moved to. But no, we want to talk about the coma. But yeah, get to the move and then we go back to the coma.
Yeah, so basically, I was in a coma for a month. And when I came out of the coma, the problem, and you know this if you've lived somewhere for a long time, everyone knows you, and which is awesome. But it also means that I can't go to the grocery store. I can't go anywhere without people pulling me and say, oh, sorry about the accent. Hate to hear that. This and this. And I appreciate it. I know it comes from a great place. But I was like, I just need to do the rebuild. Mm-hmm. Just get going. Because at that point, balance and things were an issue. So it's like, all right, this is a little off. So it was funny. I was dating Nikki. And I had just helped Tommy, my training partner, do some posing. And I was trying to adjust him on posing. And I'm just trying to do like a 3-quarter back to just show him. And I kept stumbling. And I'm like... I've been out of this coma for 3 days. This is ridiculous.
Dang.
I need to move on. Like, enough whining about this crap. So I call her and I'm like, hey, you mind if I come stay at your house for a little bit? And she goes, sure. Like, how long? And I was like, I don't know. I'm going to get a 1-way ticket and see how it goes. She goes like, sure. So I went out there for a bit and we talked and I'm like, all right, we're doing awesome. So... I'm going to move. And it was funny because I like to keep things real. Like you asked me about Arizona. I'm at the gym a couple weeks later and I'm training with Tommy. And I was like, hey, man, I'm going to move. He goes, oh, okay. When? I go, tomorrow.
He's, it's one of those guys.
What?
Dom Cardone then to me, by the way.
Did he really?
Yeah. He was like, hey, I've been putting this off for a long time. I'm moving. Are you? When? In a few days. What? Not to steal his story, sorry.
Yeah, but it's the same. I was like, and it was so funny, but what I love about my friends, they go, okay. Like, they don't, that's not a shock. They're like, he's not going to make a big deal out of this.
There's not a lot of surprises being his friend for a while.
This is an odd decision. That sounds perfect.
This sounds terrible, but you go for it.
Yeah. You go for it.
Yeah, so I went out there, and then what was funny is the plan was just to move there. She had a lease, and we were going to stay there, and then I probably was going to look at Nashville or something. And having been in Scottsdale for so long, going there and then going to Nashville, I was like, I'm done with busy. Mm. I just want to relax a little bit. And I liked it there because money is quieter in South Carolina. like you meet people and you're talking and you just, they make little mentions. Mm-hmm. Oh, you just say that. He's like, oh yeah, well my fourth company. And you're like, fourth? You know what I mean? But it's very, and I like that. I got a little tired of, and I love Scotts, don't get me wrong. I thought I was going to die in that place. But the pretentious side I can do without.
The women there would have killed you.
Oh, I was not trying so hard. There was just too many. That was my mom when I woke up from the coma. She goes, I'm glad they like all didn't come to the waiting room at the same time. Thanks, Ma. Did you shield
me? She directed traffic out there. She's, your name is... Hold on a minute. On the list of packing order. Okay, you can go in.
Thankfully, she used to work at the airport, February. So she had the...
Yeah.
So, not to take Ron completely out of this, but we spoke about the coma, and you can jump in whenever you want. Just jump straight over. Let's talk about what put you in the coma and how long you were in there, and also I will get to that part.
Dusty doesn't chew his food, apparently.
Yeah, the simple thing is years of bodybuilding, the overeating, all that. Apparently, I just had years of just acid reflux, but it was never for me like one of those that was pop a Pepsi and good to go. And I was literally, I'm eating a meal one day. I'm rushing out to an appointment, and I'm eating steak. I swallow a piece of steak, and it's caught in your throat. But you know when it's something that's caught in your throat, and you can feel it, but you can breathe. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, well, I ain't got time for this. So I jump in the shower. I'm showering. I get done. I was like, I got to get going. I got to go. I had a beard appointment for my barber. I was like, screw it. I think it'll work. So I just grab a gallon of water, and I pour it back. And I'm like, it'll go down. And it did. But the whole way down, it kind of hurt. And I'm like, that sucked. Oh, the barber, I'm telling her about it and whatever. And I get done. And I'm like, man, I still don't feel right. So I'm walking out to my car and I parked off the side. And I was like, you know, a lot of years of bodybuilding, I can make myself sick just by telling myself I need to be sick. And I was like, I bet if I get sick, this will all be over. Make myself sick. It's just blood. And I'm talking
like
a pool. Enough that I knew when I did it. I was like, how do I show someone this? So I put my foot next to it and I filmed it because it was bigger than my foot. And so I took the picture and I sent it to a friend of mine. I was like, hey, this isn't good, but how bad is it? And she goes, we got to go to the hospital. And I go, okay, I got to meet Tommy to train back.
Oh my God.
And then, and she goes, you got to go to the hospital now. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to the Mayo, but I'm going to stop off at the house and let my dogs out real quick. And she's not a big swearer. And she goes, Dusty, go to the fucking hospital. And I was like,
she knew.
Oh, we're in trouble. So went to the hospital. And long story short, they thought I had nicked it. And so they told me, like, oh, you're going to have a surgery. And
nicked what?
Just nicked, like, my throat. Somehow just, sometimes you'll just cut the esophagus. Mm-hmm. What ended up happening that I found out 27 days later was it tore all the way down.
6 inch.
Like, how big was this piece of steak you were trying to fucking inhale?
Well, apparently, you're supposed to not just put the fork and the whole thing in the mouth. No, it was just and it's funny because I still do it.
Was the T-bone still on the fucking thing?
There's a lot of protein in that, and it's very expensive.
The wall of his esophagus was so thin because it had been burned out, so they think it was just so weak that it just finally gave way.
Are you?
Yeah, and so I wake up one day, and you love how your brain works after like surgeries and drugs and everything. Cause I get up, I open my eyes and my buddy Matt's in there and he goes, hey. And I'm like, hey. And he goes, you know what day it is? And my appointment for beard is Thursday. I go, Thursday. And he goes, nope. He goes, do you know what month it is? And I was like, shit.
Imagine someone asking you that.
Yeah.
So it had been 27 days. And then, of course, I find out after the fact that I'm talking to a friend that's a doctor. And he says, I said, how bad was it? I know, obviously, the coma was bad. And I wish I had the words so people could understand. He goes, okay, you had this thing, he named it. You had this, named it. You had this. And he goes, any of those things will kill you. And he goes, but you had them all at once.
Yeah, you got a staph infection. And you got pneumonia. So they had to intubate him through his throat. You're leaving out all the deadly stuff.
Why do you think you're here?
But yeah, they put him out. They realize how bad his esophagus is. And the next thing you know, he's got pneumonia setting in. So now they got to intubate him. Staph infection sets in. They got him. They're like, his kidneys start to fail.
Oh, that was because of the water. So yeah. You'll love this, Fox.
Yeah, how's this? Tell him about the kidneys, you know, Dusty.
The water, they don't realize. You walk in, and I was 304 when I went in.
How much water is going through you?
But they're treating you like a normal person. And so I start retaining a bunch of water. My kidneys are starting to go. So they're like, oh, shoot. So they're bombing Lasix on me.
Oh, no.
And then thankfully, a friend of mine, he drinks 2 gallons of water a day.
A friend with a medical background came in and put their foot down.
My goodness.
And they're like, they did was stop all that, of course, and what? Pound fluids.
Yeah.
And then the water just started going. But now they've already, I don't want to say this because it's not their fault, but the kidney damage would have been done. So at this point, they're dealing with all that. But what was interesting, and I don't try to speed through that, but it's just things happen to people. And I feel like it's something we joke about at my house, but I've seen a few people like put up a post like three things happened in 2024 and 2024 is off to a rough start. And I'm like, are you high? Like things happen. You move forward. I remember I woke up from the coma. And I was like, all right, I'm not dead. Check. I was 230 something pounds. I'd lost over 70 pounds because when they put me under, they actually turn your body off. So you're not even like communicating within your body. So the rate of muscle loss is
mm-hmm. put on paralytic drugs. So nothing. A lot of what keeps your muscle mass is just the nerves innervating the muscle. Mm-hmm. Just as you lay on the couch and you move around and stuff. And when they paralyze you on purpose, there's no more innervation of any muscle tissue. So it's like, just like tearing a muscle. Like it has no connection. It just shuts down. Mm-hmm. So the shrinkage is just amazing.
How fast did you initially lose a lot of weight? Because you people visiting you, right?
Yeah. So it was, again, you're talking about close to 70 pounds in under 4 weeks. So it went quick. But what I enjoy, what's funny looking back is, so I wake up, they run you through the whole thing, and you're literally learning everything at this point. When they're like, all right, we got to teach you how to walk again, and that's going to take a couple weeks. And I remember immediately, I was like, oh. And I don't think people understand, and this is why I push the health and the bodybuilding, is I literally told them, I'm like, I think it's 2 weeks. And I literally walked out of the hospital 3 days later.
Wow.
Because it's like, when you've communicated, it would be the same for you guys, when you've communicated with your body that much, it was with a walker. But it was fine. I remember I was like, no, it'd only take that long if I'd let it. Mm-hmm. So like we'd do a lap and Tommy, my training partner, would come there and walk behind me and talk shit like we were training.
Oh my gosh.
It was so funny. I got a nurse next to me. I got a video of him following me. He goes, keep going. Don't stop. And I'm like, it's classic because I get out of the hospital and I always, this Nikki had been, we hadn't been together that long. And this is where she met my mother the first time because she flew in after I was in a coma. Stayed at the house. So I get out of this coma. I get home and I'm like, gosh, I got to buy her something nice. So here I am walking with my mother. I need a ride because I'm not allowed to drive the car yet. I go to Fashion Square Mall with my walker to Louis Vuitton.
Oh, jeez.
I sit down and I'm like, bring all the black ones to me. And I just sat there and the lady's just bringing them.
Nope. Nope.
And it was,
how much is this? Okay.
This guy must have money if someone's paying right?
Right.
The best part is I get done and I was like, I never do this stuff. I'm going to get one for me. I had a bag. Something happens to Nikki's bag about a year later and I have to get the receipt out. And I told Nikki the whole time, I was like, yeah, mine was like $1,800. And she's like, I can't believe you spent that on yourself. I'm like, I was high. I wouldn't usually do that.
There's still a lot of drugs in the system while.
I'm sure.
After that.
Sure. So the worst part is, though, so she takes the receipt to call them in, and she goes, she just starts laughing. I'm like, what? She goes, your bag wasn't $1,800. It was $3,800. I was like, oh no.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
Yeah. Worst purchase ever.
Yeah. Where's them drugs?
The dumbest thing I've ever. I'm like, who does this?
I got questions. Who let you do that?
Yeah.
My mother.
But I love how he just skipped out to the coma element straight into buying a bag. Going back to.
Because that's the dumbest thing I've done. Oh. I've done a lot of dumb shit.
I think the most impressive thing for me was looking back in that time. Was how you documented the whole process. You didn't hide away. You're like, I'm back in the gym. Yes, I know I've lost a lot of weight, but
25 pounds on the Smith.
Yeah,
failed.
Yeah,
I actually told Nikki that yesterday because you have the Arsenal shoulder press.
Okay,
and that was the first machine I went to use. It was the first night I could drive. I drove to the gym. It's like 2 a.m, and it's great because our gym's open. And there were people in there, so I walk over and I grab a quarter. So I was like, started a quarter, and I put it on there, and I sat down, and I pushed, and nothing happened. And I was like, so I showed Nikki because she started out, she warmed up with a quarter and she does 15 reps and puts it down. And I go, I couldn't do that the first day back after a coma, so I went down to the 10s.
Wow.
And it was like humbling. 7 on one side and 5 on the other.
Thank God it's 2 in the morning, right?
Yeah, I probably should have started with nothing. I didn't realize that was a weight.
How long did it take, though, for you to get back into firing and the mind-to-muscle connection coming back?
It was wild because the size came back ridiculously quick. Mm. The strength took time.
It's always that way.
I had a pinched nerve in my neck from being on the bed and having to move me around. So the left side of my body wasn't working. Like washing my bald head was like, okay, never mind, I'll use this hand.
Big patch of hair left.
Yes, what are we doing here? Thankfully, I've got a barber for this. But what was wild, and that's why I hammer people with the fact that muscle memory exists, is I was back up to 280 in a blink.
Really?
And the funniest part was, fortunately, I knew my career. I already knew I was done. So I was like, I'm not like trying to get huge, but I'm like, I'm just going to let my body do what it does, eat and train, because I love to train. And the muscle came back pretty quick. Mm. And the fortune was, like I said, when I went to South Carolina, I said, no one knows me. It's a small town. I'm going to go there and I can just train and get left alone. And it was great because I'm in the gym one day and I'm growing and putting on size. And I'm walking out the front door and this kid at the front desk goes, it's coming back quick. And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, since the coma. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, you don't think I knew who you were? I was like, no, he goes, we all knew. I just figured you wanted to be left alone. I'm like, this kid is awesome. I was like, how many videos you got me pressing the 30 over there?
Yeah.
Do you know what I used to message Dusty when I was in Olympia prep? There was only a few people. You know this, of course. I don't know if you do, but I had a man cave. It was a garage, but I got rid of everything, and I converted it in the back. And it was half sofa and big screen TV, and then the other half was stairs, a treadmill, and a sauna. And obviously, now it sounds bougie as fuck, right? But fucking man cave, fuck this and that. But you know what? My humble beginning.
Hard times.
You know how hard my prep was. But all that shit, I still would walk outside just to make sure I sound more fucking macho. Yeah,
boy.
I would do in the rain. I did. Florida sunshine, Florida rain, right? But I'd be in my hoodie and I'd love to do my cardio outside because it's nothing worse than watching a fucking treadmill. But when it did rain and we had them torrential rains, I would go into the garage and I had a watch list of all his shit. Because I love from that era, just a lot of like old school and the humor. So I'd text him, I'd be like, yo, I've run out of fucking shit to watch on YouTube.
Work.
So then, but one of the things I loved to do was his lifestyle stuff. So then I'm watching one video, his new one pops up, and he was like on a Costco run. All right, this is for Flex Lewis. And the title said, Request by Flex Lewis or something.
It was good for hits.
Yeah,
it was. Okay. Use your friends if you're not going to use somebody.
Yeah, but I watched so much stuff, and there was a couple of other people that I just put on that were in this rotation of training. But I like the lifestyle stuff. Yeah,
You don't want to watch him do rear delt flies?
I probably skipped through that part.
It depends on what shorts I'm wearing.
Yeah, it was just a banter I'd loved. It was just good banter and good hard training. But the stuff that I loved more than anything else, because Jay would put out his DVDs, I'd love waiting to see.
Oh, yeah.
But I loved watching what these pros, what you could obtain through bodybuilding from going back to the business element, mm-hmm. right? What you could get through bodybuilding. And these the upper tier guys, Sean Ray Inside Out? I can't remember the VHS, whatever it was back then. Was it Inside Out or something like that? He showed his lifestyle. He showed his house. He had the lions and the statues of the lions and the gladiatorial theme. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
You can obtain this from training and bodybuilding or whatever else. And then Jay would put his stuff out and Ronnie would put his stuff out. And I just loved that. So when YouTube started kicking off, that's what I love to see is people, the behind the scenes. Because I got motivated weirdly by other things.
Yeah.
I wasn't watching my competition training.
I know what you mean.
It was, I found ways to dive into you had the why, the big why I was doing the show. But then you have the branch offs as to what was going to get you moving and grooving. What kind of stuff was that for you?
Yeah, I remember there's one funny clip. I don't know what Jay video it's in, but this is our big table. I never sit at it. And then he moves on to the next room. He's at this giant dining room table, like big oak table or whatever the hell it was.
My whole family lives in that fucking space.
Yeah, he's like, I never eat in here. And he just goes to the next room. Yeah. And then I remember Jay, I don't know if it's the same house, but he had that sunken living room with the TV. the big is like, and always got big screen and a stereo sound system. Yeah. And I remember like back in the day, I'd be like, oh, I got a house like Jay's.
Yeah.
Just that sort of stuff. And but that, yeah, you're right. It was motivating. I was never a car guy or anything, but just seeing those old Mizero videos, Jay eating oatmeal at his table for 20 minutes.
Yes.
No editing.
No editing.
Just raw. That's right.
But I remember being motivated by like the fact they could do that with their day. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's 10. We're going to go do cardio. And then we're going to, that's my Jay impression. Yeah.
A little slower.
Yeah. We're going to go do some cardio and come back with play with the dogs for a while. And yeah. But I just remember being like, oh, fuck, that's cool. Just like his whole day is scheduled out. There's lots of important stuff to do, but it's his day. He decides when he does business. He decides when he returns emails. He decides when he's going to take this call. He's making all the decisions and calling all the shots. And that was motivating.
Yeah.
You know, that was like, that's the dream.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Dusty?
It's funny, but my biggest motivation when I looked at those things was the fact that, and again, back to the mistake that I had made about pausing, Jay was doing 10,000 things at once. I know he was very focused on being a champion, winning the Olympias and doing guest poses, but he was the one that was like, oh, we'll do DVDs. And we'll do one every year. Oh, we're going to do posters. Remember when he did the scissors?
Yeah.
He cut his stuff with his, I should make scissors to sell them.
And the little monster truck thing, the muscle cast.
Yes.
Yeah, all that stuff.
So he was always thinking of more stuff.
Who can forget Beats by Jay?
Oh my gosh, with the fucking shades.
Yeah.
It's like, the shades,
you're killing it, bro.
The hater shades. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
we love you, Jay.
Yeah, no, this is not a knock. That just show the hustle.
Yeah,
but he's one of the pioneers that has allowed us to think like this.
It goes to show, like, you can't be afraid to just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, guys like Jay will do something. It doesn't work. They'll do the next thing that works, and that all that is in the span of time of most people thinking about doing something
for sure.
And that's what separates everybody. Are you just going to think and talk forever? Or are you going to just do it?
And he's just...
Jay's the blueprint. Yeah. Jay's the blueprint, right? And I know that... I think you've said that before. You just have to follow Jay's blueprint.
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean,
he's the only guy in my head that pops up straight away that's done all these things that you just mentioned that has pioneered the way. So when I came to this country, I looked at what he was doing. Sean Ray was a little bit more of a little bit in the business side too.
Mm-hmm.
But Jay really separated himself from the pack. And I thought, wow, if I had the opportunity to be, or should I say have a fan base, then these are the things I need to emulate, but not copy.
Yeah, no.
There's a lot of things that you are going to find yourself in the same, you know, category as the DVDs and whatnot. But for the most part, I seen what he's done. And obviously, look what he's doing right now. He just launched his peanut butter stuff. Yeah. He's still moving and grooving. And he's got investments. And he's like one of them guys cannabis, that doesn't talk.
The cannabis, all that real estate, everything. Yeah.
Everything. But he put money in the bank when he was making money too. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the money that these guys are making right now.
Yeah, no.
The prize money back then, I think it was like 100 and something thousand maybe.
It was like
and
half
obviously
or less,
it's climbed up over the years. But
it was like 100 and a Hummer.
Yeah, that was the Arnold.
Remember, that was the Arnold, remember? Yeah.
Yeah. Don't forget the watch, too.
Yeah.
And then he went, watch. Then he lost. Then he went, hey, with the Hummer.
Remember Rich Piana?
Of course.
Who can forget? I remember Rich had this insane work ethic. He would come to the booth. He would not take a bathroom break.
Wow.
I'd take three. I'd be like, do you have to piss? He's like, yeah, I should probably. He was just one of those guys. It was just his line was so long. He was just trying to eat through it as long. And he'd stay longer than he had to be there. They'd tell him you can leave at 5 and he'd stay till 5:30 because there was more fans. And he would always say, that's what Jay does.
Really?
Jay's the king, so I'm going to do what Jay does. And I remember one year at the LA Fit, we showed up on, and this was after Rich had left Mutant and he'd started his own company, right? We show up at LA Fit and Ryan says to me, hey, let's go look at the booth. It's Thursday night or something. Friday night or whatever, the day before the expo.
Yep.
Everyone's still setting up. So we go to look at the booth that night and there's nobody in there. The hall is empty. All the booths are pretty much set up. There's a couple guys working on booths. Rich is at his booth. He's putting up banners. He's putting stuff out.
Damn.
And Rich, and he's like, oh yeah, just making sure everything's perfect. And then he goes, Jay's over there. And we look over and Jay's at his booth, helping his crew set up. And I was like, man, Rich is right. Yep. It's Jay and Rich here at Friday night setting up with their crews to make sure everything's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just,
it just all kept going back to Jay. Every time I saw someone be successful, it went back to Jay, that whole time period. Yeah.
That's why I feel like I'm so blessed to have lived the apprenticeship life with Rich Gaspari, because Rich was very much the same way. Mm-hmm. We'd land somewhere, we'd go to the booth, and obviously as the years went by, he'd hire certain people, and they'd be like, okay, we're going to the booth to set up. And some of these people came from different positions. They were like, oh, I'm not. Yes, you are.
Yep.
I'm there.
Yeah.
And Rich really led from the front. And when I seen Rich, and obviously I was the sponsored athlete, and I thought, oh, I can't eat no fucking boxes. But then when you see Rich doing it, then you adapt that mentality. It's like lead from the front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then to your point, right, you will never forget that moment when you've seen both Rich and both Jay at the expo setting up. And I'll do the, I have my own versions and my own memories, yep, of seeing, yeah, the same thing.
Yeah.
Ripping boxes, putting product, a dummy product, whatever it was. But nonetheless, pulling out the banners and, mm-hmm, before we had the big booth. Yeah. So hey, it was great to see Rich start from smaller booths, and I was there to grow into the big booths that were trying to contend against, yeah, the BSNs back in the day, and obviously that story. But I traveled around the world and I got to see it firsthand and live it firsthand with him. Mm-hmm. So it was a very great part of my bodybuilding memory, and also part of my DNA that I'm so glad that I got to live. And a lot of these guys now and girls, they got big followers and stuff like that, and they're superstar treated, right? Turn up, mm-hmm, at this time, you don't have to do this and that. So they've lost out on a lot. And I think if you appreciate the small things, like, yeah, I put that up, you have more, mm-hmm, respect for that booth, more respect for your sponsor, obviously depending on the situation too, right? But,
right.
but nonetheless, I did.
Yeah,
did.
Yeah.
Question for you guys. What do you miss most about bodybuilding?
The actual in the gym feeling of being able to run through a wall, that your body will do anything you want to do. You put 405 on a bar and fucking row it into your belt with power and explosive strength. You grab 160-pound dumbbells, kick them up, pick them up off the floor, kick them both up, press them up for 10. Just that there's something about feeling like Superman that is, it's like a memory I'll never forget. And I love that I'm not doing it anymore, because it's, I was always aware it was a short-term thing.
Yeah.
You can't do it forever. But it would be that. It's that it wasn't about looking that way. At the end of the day, the training was always like the craziest thing. My training partner just put 5 plates on the bar for his first time and did a set of squats with it the other day.
Wow.
And I hauled up behind him to spot him, and as he unracked it, I said, let's get in the fucking mood. And I was just thinking about the whole time he backed out of that rack and started squatting. I remember thinking, I remember the first time I put 5 wheels on a bar and squatted it. And I remember how nuts you have to be the first time you go to 4 plates, you're like, holy shit. The first time you go to 5 plates, you're like, it's the same. It never ends. That crazy feeling, this weight could crush me. And those moments are, they're awesome. I'll cherish those forever. When the guys I trained with doing them, because it's like the brotherhood thing. It's like guys that win championships together and stuff. There's like a bond there. You see that guy 10 years from now and you're like, hey, I know what we went through. It might sound silly to some people. It's just a workout. But at the time, it's a lot more than that to you. No. It's your whole life.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it really, for me, it comes down to, I used to really get into the mental challenge, especially preps. Training, I just love to do. I still love to do it. There's only one way, but there's something I used to get really sadistic sometimes, because I know you guys have been here, where I'd be on the step mill. And again, I had the stores. So I would start my day at the gym at 5 in the morning and end my gym, get there at 9:30 to go train and do my last cardio session. And I'd be on the step mill, 3 minutes left. And you're thinking, I'd think to myself every now and then, gosh, just stop now. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I thought that, I'd add 5 minutes to the 30 I was supposed to do for thinking it.
Wow.
Because I was like, you thought that. And obviously I never did it, but I used to love those little created conversations with yourself, because I would always remember too, the guy who's genetically better than me, he didn't think that. He's just going to do it. Flex Lewis did not consider stopping 3 minutes early. Like, how insulting is that to him, to the sport, to me, to the people who support me, that I even thought of that. So I used to love that, though, because then you would get done and you're like, there we go. Because you're, mm-hmm, like, it's that, Rob Bailey says this a lot, but I believe it. It's, if you start and end your day slaying a dragon, there's nothing you can't do. when you do something, I love setting things up. Like I tell the girls, because I've got a 15-year-old now and a 17-year-old. I'm like, you need to find things that are painful to overcome, because life's going to throw comas at you and deaths and these things. But when you've given yourself discomfort, you're ready. You're like, okay, we'll do that too. Now what? But people who don't put themselves into hard spots on purpose, they get their asses handed to them when life gives it to them. And that's when you hear the 2024 starting off a little hard.
Oh, like, my knee's bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that those are the things that I really look back at, because you feel them every now and then. You'll be doing something. You're like, oh, I know where this came from. That was rugby or hockey or football, yep. Bodybuilding. It all set you up for these things. And you're like, I overcame that too. This will be fine.
And both your answers, when you're talking about that feeling of being invincible, like Superman, and you can rip anything, and you know you can. It's just this weird feeling, and just add in time on the clock. Mm-hmm. I would do stuff like that too.
Yeah.
So I would do my round of cardio and say Neil had me doing, he's probably going to fucking watch this and kick my ass.
No, we're on it. He won't watch it.
Yeah, you won't watch it.
He doesn't care.
He don't care anymore. he cares about you two, not me. But say you give me like 60 minutes of cardio, I would do my cardio, and then the remaining time that I would end up back on the stairs or something like that at the house.
Yeah.
And I was doing glute squeezes or whatever on the stairs. I would put more time on the clock, because I was like, there was a moment where I got off the gas to open up the door.
Right,
to get into the fucking garage, to jump on this.
Make sure.
So now, fuck that. Yeah, Dusty's on the fucking Costco run, you're on the TV. So,
This episode's not over anyways. It's fine.
I do miss. But obviously, we're all in new chapters, right? We're all in new chapters.
Yeah.
And for me, now moving forward, I truly had to, and this is a question I want to hear from both you both also. I truly worked on killing that guy off. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise it's just going to be another whisper in my ear being like, you still got it.
Right.
You got it, Flex. And it happens all the time. There's not a week that goes by that somebody doesn't put a comparison photo up, or somebody doesn't hit me in the DMs.
Right.
Or
can you imagine?
It does happen every week consistently. Every time I do a question and answer, somebody say, hey, when's your next show? When are you coming back? Have you thought about doing the open? And somebody's been living under a rock, right? But I do enjoy these questions, so keep them coming in. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Helps the algorithm. Still, the questions come in as if one person is going to change my mind, but I worked so hard at killing that guy off.
Yeah.
And even when I had that pop of retirement in my head, I sat in it for 3 months and I couldn't fight it. What happened when you guys said, okay, the stage time was done? Was it hard for you to kill that guy off?
No, like I said, I was a battered battleship running on fumes. And I knew that it was my last year. And then I thought, okay, I can get healthy. After I got my pro card, I thought, you know what? I owe it to myself to do a couple more shows. So I'm going to take a year and just train and make sure I'm fully recovered from all my little nags. Like, they're going to go away at 40 years old. and then when I got back up over 300, and I was like, okay. And then I tore my quad.
Oh, man.
And then I was like, I guess I'll open a gym. And I...
Did do too bad.
Yeah.
It worked out okay.
Yeah.
So I just, And then that was, as soon as we opened the gym, about a year later, I remember Emily, she's like, you realize that you took contest prep bodybuilding and you just dropped it on the business.
West Coast Iron.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out.
Hey. Gotta give a plug. Come on, bro.
Yeah, this thanks, Flex.
Open mic night.
I gotta say, you were in town one time for a very short period of time. And you were like on the opposite side of Vancouver, like an hour away. He came in for an appearance. And I said, man, I wish I could get you out to my gym. But like, he was literally there, like hardly at all.
I was 15 minutes, if that.
So
fucking I would.
Flex goes, I'll come down and sign your wall and I'll do a video in your gym and put it on Instagram. So he got the promoter to drive him an hour out of the way at 11 o'clock at night. I had to send somebody down to open the gym for him, to let him in. To do a video on the turf going, hey, I'm down at West Coast Iron. It looks beautiful. Like we'd only been open
just
it short.
Opened up.
Just opened.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
And signed the wall and then got back in the car, went to the airport.
You had to get the hell out of here. You get home.
And that's the type of thing, man, I could count on one hand the number of people that would do that. Yeah, one. I need really one finger. I need one finger to count the people that would do that. And so, yeah, it's business is also about the friends that help you along the way. And that's why I love helping out friends in business, because it all comes back to you. And
And it's just, yeah, it's been an awesome experience.
It has.
But yeah, I don't miss it.
Don't miss it.
I think the bodybuilding side was easy, but I did find when I was done, and I'm sure you've run into this, nothing has so far replaced the feeling of pouring in. You have successful business things and failed business things and a lot of things that go on. And I was like, and that's when I started doing the tattoos. Because I was like, I got to make sure I'm done.
As if the coma wasn't enough.
It's like, I got this was before that. So I was
get something offensive on your chest.
I literally was like, I got to, because I know it's something that bothers me in bodybuilding. You lose things from the shadows. So I was like, I'm going to do that. But then, as luck would have it, by becoming a stepfather and stuff, I realized what replaced it now is helping them with their things, because it's wild. And you've already got this some, but I look at my whole career and it's funny to think of the amount of things that bodybuilding has given me. But I had texted Ron because I bought our oldest daughter her first car.
Ooh.
And a couple things about that. First off, I paid for it, but she got to pay me back because I'm like, we ain't raising no brats. I was like, your monthly payment's due on the 15th.
You now get zero allowance.
You get 0% interest, which she has a job. But I remember we went and I bought the car and I brought it, got it, gave it to her. And I was like, holy shit, nothing in my life was as cool as this. Like literally, I remember I was like, I think I'm more excited than her, which is hard to imagine. And I'm like, it just blew my mind that I'm looking for things to search wins. And I was like, oh, it was a $15,000 4Runner. But it was definitely wild when you realize that, because it was real simple. She had sent me a couple of emails. She's like, oh, I want to get this. And I said, do you want it bad enough to pay for it? It was a test. I'm like, because I'm not giving you a car. Just my vision doesn't line up with that. And she said, yeah. And I was like, okay. So I found one, and it's not a perfect car. It's 10 years old. In love with it. And I just remember going, wow. I finally found something that replaced it, and I let them do whatever. Like, it's not about, I don't care about sports, what they do. Just like, all I tell them is I'm teaching the do your passion, because I'm like, my life exists because I worked hard at things I loved.
Yeah. Mm.
And it was never about making the most money. I could have made more money if I'd have turned away bodybuilding and just focused on my business.
Yeah.
But I had a plan. And so that's what I hammer home to them. And every time I see those little decisions towards the passion, and the work, I'm like, okay, this is where I can put that effort, that I really enjoy it at a level that's probably better than finding out that my hamstring is what lifts my foot onto a curb when I was so tired to have a muscle tell me that. I was like, oh, the hamstring lifts the foot. Now I know.
So you're saying is the new endeavors that you're and all the new chapter you're in is now fulfilling that bodybuilding passion.
Yes.
Or aid. I wouldn't say it's probably not fulfilling, but it's aided the gap that it was once given you.
Life now is actually, I loved my bodybuilding life, the focus and the drive and the torture and all that. But life is like way more fun now. And I know there's more stress and more responsibility and real businesses and planning for my retirement. Like it's kind of like all that stuff. It's a lot more, it's on the line almost, but it's way more fun. Like just for me, I think, because I kind of, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know any other way to live than pursuing passions. Like I just don't even know where to begin.
We live like monks.
Yeah.
So now when that
yeah
cloak has been taken off, we're on fucking BMX bikes doing tricks.
Yeah. Hey man, I don't want to grow up, man. There's something I just always needed. I guess the tricks on BMX. I think I always had an artistic side of myself that was part of my bodybuilding, like bodybuilding's physical and all that. But I also still saw like the artistry side of it, and you're creating something and it's a performance art in a way, an extreme performance art. And so all that applies. And I think that I was always a freestyle kid. And so I think that's why that element was always in there. And I think that's kind of part of the fun for me. The physical meets mental meets creative.
Yeah. Hey Tyus, any questions for the guys? And we'll get one question and we'll land the plane, I think.
Yeah, if you could go back, if you could start this journey over again, what would you change?
Oh, okay.
And then I got one question.
I think what's great, and this is, I hate when a question leads me to the answer that everyone knows you're going to say. But when you look, the only reason I can say I wouldn't change anything is because, just like we talked about with business, with bodybuilding, the mistakes are what helped me the most.
Mm-hmm. That wasn't the question. The question is, what would you change?
I did get married 3 times.
Oh, shit. Like,
that's 3 houses you didn't need to give away.
Yeah, there we go. He's answering it now.
Things get in there. No, I mean, in all honesty, I would say that if I could change one thing that I look back, it would actually be in those lines, which is when I was bodybuilding, I didn't realize that I was focusing on all of my outturn. So it was financial, physical, all these things. And my personal life actually was a mess in a lot of ways because most of what I did was like, okay, I'm not a problem because look at me, I'm successful, I'm this and that. And I tore through women, good people and things like that. My personal life was a mess because of it. And it wasn't until I slowed down and went, oh, why is a guy who wants to be married and this and that keep making these mistakes that aren't mistakes, they're decisions, you know, and then you start stepping back and, oh, because I'm a mess. And as soon as I cleaned that up, life got really easy, except for one thing that I always bitched Nikki about, which is this phone, because I leave it places now. And I was like, when I was a scumbag, I always knew where my phone was.
I was a scumbag.
But now that I'm not, I lose the phone. I leave it in your car. I can't find it.
Good people lose their phones.
Yeah, good people
dirtbags never lose their phones.
I'm going to tell my wife, see, this is why I lose my phone all
good
the time.
Good people.
Oh my God, nothing to hide. That thing is everywhere. I'm like,
yeah,
oh,
that's fucking great. You just taught me something.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm a real butterfly effect guy. Like, I just can't get around the concept of changing anything and having myself not be sitting in the lair right now with Flex Lewis and Dusty Hanshaw. And I think of all the people who ever lived and all the lives that were handed out as you walk down the line. Like, here's the life you're going to live. You know what? All the life that gets assigned to all of us by destiny and all that stuff. And I don't think I would throw any of this back, because what you draw, you know, you throw back for another try. That's just a desperately, agonizingly not pleasant idea. I love my life now and the people in it and everything. And I know I put my body through the ringer, a lot of injuries I wish I could dodge. But if I dodge those injuries, I don't learn those lessons and I don't meet those people. And
okay, yeah, you guys are really good at dodging questions.
Hey, I went in finally. I brought
he
in
did.
Cheating.
He did. He put a tip in.
Dusty.
He stuck his
I
tip in.
Whoring it. All right.
Yeah. Dusty would give away less houses.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a different question then. Of those lessons that you learned from the mistakes you made, which of those was most impactful to you?
Dodge that, bitch.
Yeah. Probably I made mistakes with relationships too, that because I was so focused on bodybuilding. Bodybuilding can be a very self-absorbed thing. And even though they were great relationships and they ran their course pretty naturally, I think you still think, man, I didn't really give that person, like, you know, what I wish I could have in hindsight. You know what I mean? And it could be friendships too. There's friendships I could have pursued that would have been great, but I just didn't have time. Yeah. I don't have time for this. I don't have time for stuff. But it all just comes back to where we are now. I guess if it's something directly, it would be, I don't think I really needed to tear my quad.
I'm just glad you didn't say convincing Jim to bring me on when I shot him an email.
No, I don't know.
Do
man.
Not bring Dusty Hanshaw on.
I'm not a man of much regret. Yeah, I'm just not.
You know. I'll take both the answers and say I agree with both. Other than. The divorce.
It's not my fault that you would find a good woman and then all of a sudden dresses got shorter and legs got longer.
We're very blessed, though. Yeah. We are very blessed to say we've got great women, though.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I think that's a massive part in all of our progression, right?
Yeah.
To see the best version of us, we have to have a woman that believes in us, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to push us. It turns up after just dating, what, a month or so, to be bedside fever and coma and be with you for all the years of the ups and downs.
12 years we've been together.
Yeah, as of myself and Ali. All these trophies. But
through all the bullshit.
Yeah, all the...
Hey, can I go do a podcast with Flex Lewis on our holiday? Yeah, go.
You know what's funny, Flex?
You know, this was encouragement.
An early part of our relationship that was so funny, but I was doing a shoot with a new company and we're dating short term. And I said, hey, I'm going to call you in an hour. She goes, okay. So 7 hours goes by. And I'm like, got to make the call. So I get back to my room and I'm like, hey. She goes, what's up? And I'm like, yeah, sorry, I was working and we did. And she goes, yeah, you're working. I'm like,
she's like, I don't care.
I go, you seem fine. She goes, why would I not be fine? Are you working? And I'm like, Oh, shit.
This is perfect.
You got a keeper. I'm like, and where do I buy rings? BlueNile.com.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
But it was funny because that was it, previous situations that I had been in, that was going to be a problem. Mm. And that's when I was like, oh, man, this girl gets it. And in our industry, you guys both know this. Like you said, Ron, you're on vacation. You weren't planning on being here today. And when you have the right people in your corner, they don't say, okay, they say, hurry up.
Yeah.
Go do this thing. You know what I mean? Even if it's go have fun with your boys, go.
I kicked her out of the office. She was working. I was like, yeah, I'm doing a podcast.
I was wondering why she punched me.
I have one question from the fans, right? This is something that we put together last minute. But the question is, what is the most embarrassing moment you've had in bodybuilding?
Right now.
By the way, this is going to be a fucking reel. You know that, right? Yeah, so make it good.
Ready. Gotta go deep.
I got to take a piss. I need a piss, too.
I got to take a piss so bad. This
well,
is my most embarrassing moment.
Well, if Fusty wants to this, but all, I need to go, too.
I had a bad shot in my glute once.
Oh.
And I had to
looks like you got one right now. He's fucking squirming like mine.
And I had to compete anyways because it was like, oh, fuck. So I just changed my shots and hope they didn't notice. And I remember hated being on stage that year.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah.
You need a piss, didn't you?
I got
a
piss.
Go, cool. Come back and finish that. Say. Yeah, that's a fucking. Have a think when you're pissing about that terrible story
I'm
you just told
take
me.
Time.
A I'm. I need a piss shot. Too, but I've crossed my legs. I am busting. That's why I'm doing the tap dance over here. But anyway, I'm a hardcore professional here.
It's so. You know what's funny is I'm thinking. Here's what sucks about being my personality is. If something embarrassing happens to me, I like to bring it onto a podcast the next day.
All right, okay.
I'm like, let me tell you this dumbass thing I did. Because there's just a certain amount. But the problem with that is it makes remembering something brutally embarrassing, like, very tough. I'm trying to think. What is something that you can think of? I got one. It's not embarrassing, but it's a great story, so I'm going to tell it. So, Jose and I. So there we are.
There we are.
We're in Australia. We did a 3-week tour. And we get a day off finally. It's like day 18 or something. So Jose and I are like, hey, let's go down to the Opera House and have fun. So we go down there. I did not quite understand how much fun we're going to have or how drunk we're going to get.
Jose loves his drinks.
So he introduced me to mojitos.
Okay.
Fine. I'm not a big drinker. I liked it. So we get absolutely annihilated, right? And we're laughing and loud. We decide we need to go eat. So we're walking down, and all of a sudden, there's these two cops, and they go, hey! And I'm like, oh, no. I don't know what the laws are here, how drunk are. We did both just piss off the pier. I don't know if they saw it. Oh. And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, Jose, Dusty, come over here so we can get a picture.
No.
So I was like, we got to go take a picture with him. So we go over, and we're standing there, and I lean in. We take the picture, and the guy goes, you're having a good time, huh?
Australian accent.
And I go, yeah. And he goes, I could smell you walking.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm like, it's fine. They were cool. They direct us where we go to eat. So the next morning, I woke up. And I had a bunch of cash, Australian cash, and I opened my wallet, and I had nothing. And I said, Jose, how much did we drink? And he goes, I don't know, but we spent all your money, and I owe you 200 more.
Oh, shit.
I was like, and I go, do you remember pissing off the pier? He goes, I don't think that happened. I'm like, it did. Again, not a bad story. Not embarrassing because I just told it.
PG. I'll be honest with you. You've got to supersede this.
Jose and I just easily pissing off the pier at the Opera House.
I got to tell you, that bathroom break changed my worldview.
I know. I'm ready to go too. But
okay, I remember.
I'll be a pro.
I remember. I remember an embarrassing moment, gym related. I tipped a leg press over once, in a busy gym.
Idiot.
And I felt like the dumbest motherfucker that ever lived. Like, I was so upset with myself. I was just out of it. I did a big crazy set of leg press. Mm-hmm. I was unloaded one side and putting it on the hack. And then I just wasn't thinking, and I just kept unloading that side and put it on the frame of the hack and not the frame of the leg press.
Yeah.
And because I had unloaded one side before and left the other side, because I didn't realize that leg press wasn't bolted down, and it was just...
And I just remember feeling like I'm the expert in the gym. I'm the big bodybuilder in the gym that knows how everything works. And I tipped the leg press over. And I just remember there was a guy doing sissy squats on one of those little sissy squat benches right beside the leg press. And he'd walked away. And when it tipped over, it landed on that thing. So he would have been catastrophically injured. And I just remember being like, I remember feeling, can I ever train here again?
Yeah.
These owners think I'm so stupid. They came in, they're like, what did you do? Because they heard this bang.
Yeah.
Everyone in the gym's like, how did you tip that over? I know it sounds dumb to a lot of people, but when you're someone in the gym who criticizes how other people behave,
yeah,
and that guy doesn't know what he's doing. And I just remember feeling, and that, you know, when you almost, have you ever almost hit a pedestrian with your car?
No, that's like Canadian people.
Someone like, yes.
People driving the wrong side of the road.
Maybe it's their fault, but it's a close call or something close call. I just remember how horrified. I was like, I would have killed that guy. And I just felt so stupid. But yeah, that was, I remember that I didn't feel the same about going back to that gym for a while because I was so embarrassed.
He took a piss, and this is the best story he comes with.
I'm trying trinkling. To think of like how I'm going to have a shirt made with a sideways leg press and Ron standing next to it.
The thing about embarrassing is I don't have a lot of embarrassing moments in my life. I've got upsetting and stuff, but really the feeling of being embarrassed, I remember thinking like, this is the worst. That was like...
Well, talking of worst, I am there to go.
It's time.
And I think we are going to land this plane right now.
Sounds good.
And I'm hoping to be straight out of piss, not straight out of the lair. So I truly appreciate you guys on the show. And I know I'm really taking time away from your girls.
No,
vacation.
Man.
But it's always an honor to have you around. And I've truly enjoyed this. I need to jump on your show. So
absolutely.
On the closing... Plug your show, plug, you know, what you got going up, and then I go to pee.
We got It's Just Bodybuilding. It's Dusty Hanshaw, myself, and the producer, Scott McNally, over on the Think Big Bodybuilding Media Network on YouTube. And you can find us on Think Big Bodybuilding on YouTube, and there's a series of shows over there, and It's Just Bodybuilding is ours.
Yep.
And Dusty and I, of course, both sponsored by Mutant, and traveling the world, the Mutant Expo circuit this year. So we're going to be at the booth. So come see us anywhere you got to go.
Absolutely.
And, we'd love to have you on, Flex. We've had Jay on. We've had a bunch of good guys on. So you'd have a good time.
He's got
to
go.
I'm trying to make myself comfortable, but I was there 15 minutes ago. And when you said you got to pee, you planted that seed. But
I tried
time,
to make
guys.
It.
Take your time. You got other things to promote?
Oh, I wanted to tell you about this one time at band camp.
Oh, fuck. That time you were talking about pissing off the pee, huh? I'm ready to go.
See, now I feel like I'm not a finisher, right?
I'm there, finish. Though. I'm holding it to the end.
I know.
But again, Dusty, is there anything you want to plug?
Nah, we're all connected on the same thing, so it's a beautiful thing.
It is. You guys are going to some shows. I'm off the piss. It's straight out of the lair, joined by these two hooligans. I'm going to be on their show. Check it out and subscribe, comment, like, all that shebang. Let me know in the corner.
And ring the bell.
There we go.
Ring the bell. Oh, yeah. All right, I'm ringing my bell. Straight to the left. We are out.